We are wrapping up this series in 1 Corinthians, that just a three-week series that we were doing. We call it a renewed normal. And the reason we call it a renewed normal is because much of the cultural rhetoric right now is about, man, I can't wait till things get back to normal. And we're wiser than that. So what we did was, right, as the people of God, trying to live in wisdom, we went back and we looked at our news feeds in 2019 when things were normal, and we realized that people were not very happy. And maybe normal isn't all it's cracked out to be. And so we got to get back to something better than normal, a renewed normal. That's what we're after. And so all I've been trying to show you is a rhythm that you see over and over again in the scriptures, and it's emphasized here at the end of 1 Corinthians 15, the beginning of 1 Corinthians 16. It's like three links on a chain, where basically the first week we see that the gospel, that is the life, death, resurrection of Jesus, gives us the posture of victory towards our lives, that we can live a victorious life where the one problem to which all the other problems point of death has been conquered. Consequently, we don't have to live so scared anymore. Then last week, we saw how that living victoriously in the gospel allows us to live a good life, a purposeful life. That is, the gospel does not just save us, but it changes every area of our lives and invites us to live with a degree of intentionality and focus. And this week, what I'm going to talk to you about is how we don't want to just live victoriously and purposefully, but we also want to live generously. Okay, that's the end goal in mind for the follower of Jesus, is it's not just about staying here and sort of like, okay, I've got purpose and vision and a sense of fulfillment of what it is I do, but God always, look at me, always, look at me at home, always, always blesses us to be a blessing. God is the richest being, the totality of the cosmos, and he does not hoard his riches. He does not abuse and exploit those who are underneath his good and gracious rule. He is generous. He lavishes generosity upon us, but the reason God blesses us, this is all the way back to what he spoke over Abraham in Genesis. Abraham, I'm going to bless you. Why? So that you might become a blessing. Talking about generosity, I understand it's kind of a weird time to talk about generosity. There's some tenseness over the topic that I want to name on the front end. On one hand, these have been, I'm going to elaborate on this a little bit, but these have been financially difficult and uncertain times. It, you know, the sensationalism of the news is always stoking fear that the global economy might crumble at any point, as well as, and I'm not just saying, hey, it's sensationalized, because a lot of you, it is not lost on me, a lot of people in our church lost jobs, got furloughed, faced a financial hardship last year that they never would have imagined, and is really, really painful. And I'm not going to be dismissive of that, and it would be silly for me to not be nuanced here, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. On the other hand, here's my burden, is what differentiates an okay life or a good life from a great life is generosity. What differentiates an okay life or a good life from a great life is whether or not you practice generosity. That's what it boils down to, is whether or not we are generous. And the scriptures have financial generosity in mind. That's mostly what Paul's going to talk about in this passage we just read. But whole life generosity, time, talent, treasure, everything about us, God gave us everything. And to reflect like a mirror reflects in front of us, what I want to reflect is the generosity of God and the gospel to those around me. Generosity has power, particularly in times like this where people are anxious and scared to catastrophize in the future and finding any particular justification in order to perpetuate the narrative of self-preservation in the name of cynicism. Generosity has the power to transform moments. March 12th, 2020, I remember the date because what happened was so impactful on me, I wrote it down. March 12th, 2020, it felt like the world was coming to an end. You remember March 12th, 2020, or at least March 2020? It's like, are we going to be able to have church on Sunday? That's kind of like was the conversation. Things were starting to shut down. There were sensationalist news headlines talking about how like the food supply chain was going to crumble. And so consequently, you need to get to a grocery store as soon as possible if you want you and your family to be able to eat this coming weekend. You remember that? People assaulting one another in the aisles over water and toilet paper. My wife, the hero and courageous warrior woman that she is, went to Trader Joe's on 8th in Colorado like a boss with my three kids at the time, our three kids at the time. And it's like Mad Max in there, you know, just people, post-apocalyptic scenes in there. And I mean, like we kind of laugh about it, but you remember how scary that was going in there? You going in and it's like, the meat's gone, the bread's gone, People grabbing 12 bags of frozen broccoli, even though they hate broccoli because I don't know, we might need it. Remember that? We laugh at it now, but at the time, real? Real? My wife makes her way in there, three kids in tow, goes to the back of the Trader Joe's where the eggs are, just wants to get some eggs for the family. All the eggs are gone until Trader Joe's employee comes back, one carton in his right hand, one carton in his left hand, and says very foolishly to a mob of egg seekers, "Hey, we found two more cartons. Does any?" And this lady right next to him goes, "Mine! I don't need them!" Grabs them out of her hands, his hands. The lady grabs them out of the employee's hands like it was like the one ring to rule them all, clutching them. Precious eggs. But it was just sort of par for the course. It wasn't like, the weird thing about that moment is it wasn't weird. That was just the way everybody was acting. And this lady composes herself, kind of returns back to a human, and looks up, and she sees my wife, kind of in shock, with three kids, and she kind of collects herself, and she's just like, "You know what, I don't need both of these, you can have one." And my wife shared that story when she got home, and she was like, light shone in the darkness just for a minute, and it changed the entire dynamic. That's the power of generosity, to transform a post-apocalyptic Trader Joe's into a sermon illustration a year later, right? That's the power of generosity. And here's what happens, is moments like that build up to ultimately lead to us living truly great lives. I'm talking greatness in the way that God defines greatness. A guy who's been very influential in my life, he spoke this to me like 3 months ago, and I've thought about it almost daily. He said, "You know, we're all going to die." That's part of the series. We're all going to die. "And at your funeral, people will be crying. But at your funeral, people will be crying for one of two reasons. Either they'll be crying because they are lamenting what they wish they had received from you, or they'll be crying tears of joy because they appreciate all that you had given them. Which is it going to be?" Generosity makes the difference between the two and the type of tears that are shed. And so I understand it's kind of like a weird time to be talking about generosity, but I'm kind of a challenger by nature, and so I think it's kind of the perfect time to be talking about generosity. And if you're new here, we have a lot of new people here. It's like so awesome to see you guys. And a lot more people have been tuning in online than I realize. And so we love you guys as well. And probably a lot of you are trying to make sense of this and kind of like, is this the church, especially for the new, like, is this a church that is after my money? Like, we're not after your money. If you come here for any period of time, hopefully what we do testifies to that. But what we are unapologetically after is you living a great life as God defines greatness. And it's impossible. Look at me. It is impossible to live a truly great life as God defines greatness and not be regularly practicing generosity. So I'm really pumped to talk to you about this. I hope it's helpful to you. And here's what we're going to do, big picture. I've got a point number. We'll kind of walk through it. It'll be a little bit of a surprise. I know you get like kind of excited about like, what's the next sermon point going to be? So I don't want to spoil it here from the very beginning. That was a joke. I know. yeah. Somebody was like, "I don't feel that at all." I know. That's why I made the joke. You got it, Ev, right? Is that okay? Thanks, man. But here's what I first want to talk about, is I'm going to give you some thoughts on the fear of the moment. I've titled this point, "Some Thoughts on the Fear of the Moment." So here is point number one. So before we dive into the text, I just want to give you kind of big picture, kind of some of what I feel like is going on right now as we try to wrap our mind as it pertains to generosity. Let me start with this. We're 10 years into this thing, and one of the cool things about a decade of ministry in the city is I feel like we have enough experience to see different trends. And one of the more encouraging cultural trends, at least I've seen personally, is I feel like people are more desirous to be generous. I think generosity, whether you're in the church, outside of the church, is a certain value that is admired. I think people even aspire to. But the catch with it is, what a lot of us feel is, as much as we admire somebody who's generous and we aspire to be somebody who's generous, it doesn't really feel like a great time to be generous. Not only because, on one hand, when was it ever a good time to give money away? Anybody find that time yet where it's like, this is just a good time for me to not spend all of my money on myself? So that's one side, but it's uniquely amplified in all we've been through, where, again, a lot of the fear of what we've been through over the past year, and even, it doesn't just end, it keeps going on and on and on. You know, it's just like, I mean, now the headlines are like, will mainland China attack Taiwan? Will the global economy crumble? And so it just gives kind of enough fuel, enough, kind of like the media piles one more log on the fire of fear that gives us justification to sort of hoard and be stingy and kind of only watch out for ourselves. I feel like, I don't know if this analogy makes sense, but I was walking here this morning and I was thinking of this. I kind of think about the way a lot of us feel about generosity is the way I feel about like running a marathon. I admire people that run marathons. I aspire to be a marathoner someday. I'm just not in a season of life where it's good for me to be a marathoner right now, okay? And that's the way a lot of us feel with generosity. It's like, we admire it, we aspire to it, it's just not a good time. And by the way, did you see what just is about to happen? Oh my. And so I just want to speak to this in a few ways. I'm going to give you kind of four quick thoughts as it pertains to this. One, nuance is necessary here, okay? Nuance is necessary here. So again, I don't want to be dismissive of the financial complexities and diversity in the room, and a lot of you have been through some really, really difficult things, and we would never be dismissive of that, so I hope me talking about this in no way reflects that. On the other hand, the reality is 2020 was not the Great Depression, and for a lot of you, you not only had one of your best financial years ever, but all of a sudden you had stimulus checks in your account you didn't even ask for. You're like, wow, that was cool. Okay, so nuance is necessary here. Two, with all that said, the curse of more is real. The curse of more is real. And here's what I mean when I say the curse of more. The curse of more is the belief, a lot of us were raised to believe, we don't say it out loud, but I'm gonna say it out loud, a lot of you subconsciously feel it, is if I only had more, or if I can only accumulate enough resources, I can ensure that I'll be safe, stable, and happy for the rest of my life. And once I arrive at that destination, then I will start being generous. I'm going to accumulate enough resources to be safe, stable, and happy for the rest of my life. And at that point, I will start to become abundantly generous. Now, I'm going to spoil this a little bit for you, okay? If the criteria for you being generous as you accumulate enough resources to be safe, stable, and happy for the rest of your life, you know how much resources you're gonna need? More. I don't care what you make, more. That's what you're gonna need, more. That's not reality. It's not reality to believe this, okay? And I'm telling you, I've seen this up close, and it burdens me, it makes me sad. I've been with people who make more in a year than most of us will make in a lifetime, at least what I'll make in a lifetime. And they are legitimately concerned. They are not generous because they legitimately believe if I could just get a little bit more, then I will start practicing a rhythm of generosity. That's actually even interesting, the data. People who make less tend to be way more generous than people who make more. And I think it's because people who make less don't buy into that lie that money's gonna save me. But when you got a lot of it, it's easy to start living that way because you get little tastes of power and opportunity, and then you start to believe because I can do some things, I can do all things, like ensure I'm gonna be okay forever, which you're not. The curse of more is real, and it's a curse. It is a curse. Three, that fear, when faced, can lead to joy. One of the reasons I'm very passionate about emotional health is because we understand emotions healthy in a God-honoring way. It leads us into unique intimacy with God. And the emotion of fear, when we don't dismiss it or dissociate from it, or we don't numb ourselves like, you know, a typical Denverite who sort of, I don't want to think about that stuff, so I'm going to distract myself in all sorts of unhealthy ways. But when we press into what is this fear communicating to me about reality, we are invited into unique intimacy with God. The fear that we feel of, man, if I could just have enough stuff to make sure I'm safe, stable, and happy for the rest of my life, is I feel out of control. That's what we're afraid of. And then we buy into the delusion of, I'm gonna work hard enough and acquire enough stuff to feel in control. Now, here's what I wanna let you know, okay? You don't control anything that really matters. I'm not saying you're not responsible, I'm not saying you have no influence over your life, but I'm saying when it boils down to it, we don't ultimately control anything that really matters. And the sooner we accept that reality, the sooner we can be invited into experiencing the flourishing that God invites us into. Because what the narrative of the gospel tells us is, on one hand, it is very frightening to say, I don't control anything that really matters, but there's a God who controls everything. And that power and majesty and might, whereas in every other sector of culture, it might be used to abuse and use people. And the God of the gospel, he uses his power to bless and to build up and to give. The gospel tells me, I don't control anything, but I am the beloved adopted child of the God who controls everything. And consequently, I don't have to try to control my life so much. Even, I want to testify to this. Can I testify to this for a second? I've been married for almost 14 years. I'm excited about that. Yeah, that's thank you. And we have learned so much. We have messed up so much. But one of the things I'm most proud of is from the first month of marriage, me and my wife practiced biblical generosity. We tithed to our church. We gave above and beyond, not a lot. And especially in those first, like, we have not missed a month. And I'm so proud of it. I'm not just so proud of it, but I more like want to testify to what God did through being obedient there. The first 3 years of our marriage, my wife and I were in school. We were both paying for school. We were making that work and piecing stuff together through scholarships and things like that. And this is going to seem a little bit like one of those, like, I walked to school both ways in the snow, but just indulge me for a second, okay? My wife and I, we worked 5 part-time jobs between the two of us for the first 3 years of our marriage. And the first year of our marriage, we made $20,000 combined between us in our 5 jobs. And I think we eventually, year 3, hit like $24,000, something like that. Every single month, we gave and we gave and we gave. And we went through like some crazy stuff. Like the second year of our marriage, my wife had a scan, found out she had a tumor, emergency procedure done at Duke University. I don't know if you know this, but those things are kind of expensive. Just a million different ways that through that regular practice of obedience and generosity, God showed up. And here's the gift that God gave me. This is what I want to testify to. Is on the end of those 3 years, what God did not do is like, you know, I had some aunt I didn't even know about who was a millionaire who died, who like left me her fortune because she felt sorry. It's like that didn't happen. What did happen, I really don't mean this as a cliche. What did happen is God gave me a gift better than that, to give me a rock solid soul level intestinal fortitude that God is who he says he is, and he loves me and he cares for me and he'll provide for me. It'll provide for my family. And that, and I'm telling you something, like, it's one thing to know that, it's another thing to experience it, to taste and see it. It's like the difference between having a concept that honey is sweet and tasting its sweetness for yourself. And I'm telling you, like, in so many different ways, what God did in that was instill in our family, like our little family together, this just like, as much as we fear and doubt and are scared, this sort of certainty that like God is for us, and so we can risk for the things that are aligned with his heart, so we can do something like move to the other side of the country to help start a church, and here we are. And here we are, you know? And it's just like Paul says this in 2 Corinthians 8 when he's talking about generosity. He's like, this benefits you. Like, Paul's pitch for generosity is not like, we're dying, and if you don't give, we're not going to be okay, and the gospel's going to crumble. The gospel's going to advance. We get to decide if we're going to be a part of it or not. And woe to the one who misses out on full participation in the gospel. Woe to us who miss out on that. Fourth, one of the things I love about what Paul does here, and this is sort of setting up the remainder of what we're going to do, is that Paul, in line with Jesus, as the scriptures testify to over and over again, the scriptures don't just tell us what to do. The gospel doesn't just tell us what to do, but it helps us get there. Okay, this is very kind. Like, we aren't given moralism. The gospel gives us a vision for life. It gives us a destination. But it also puts like, it gives us like the car and the fuel in the car to get there. And that's basically what Paul is doing. I'm gonna speak a little bit from this passage. It's only two verses. I'm really gonna focus on one because verse one is basically Paul just introducing the idea of like, hey, we're trying to fund the ministry of what we're doing here. But I'm also gonna be drawing, if you wanna read further on this, I'm gonna be drawing a good bit from 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 as well. 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, if you wanna read that later. And so what Paul's going to do is give us two things as it pertains to a life of generosity. He's going to give us a plan for generosity, and he's going to give us the power to actually be generous. A plan for generosity, and then the power to actually get there. So if you want to look at chapter 16, verse 2. So verse 1 is him continuing this line of thought. Hey, in light of the resurrection, live differently, be generous, fund the ministry that we are trying to advance. Verse 2 is basically how we do it. It's him being very, he gives a fivefold systematic, like here's what should mark our practice of generosity. So let's look at 16:2 together. He says this. He says, one, that our generosity, let me read it. Now concerning the collection of the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so also are you to do. On the first day of every week, each of you is to put something aside and store it up as he may prosper, so there will be no collecting when I come. Five kind of ideas that Paul has here. We'll hit them quickly. One, he talks about generosity being regular. Regular. He says on the first day of every week. So a lot of times what happens is we're exclusively generous in reaction to a crisis that arises that is not bad, but that shouldn't be the plan A of your generosity. Okay, he's saying from the very beginning, on the first day of every week, you can already see him sort of instilling in people, hey, there's a regular rhythm. As you acquire stuff, you set some of that aside to obey God's command to be generous. So regular. Secondly, he says it should be universal. Each of you. Each of you. You know what each of you means in the Greek? PT, you went to seminary. You know what each of you means in the Greek? Each of you. That's what it means. All of us. All of us is what it means. He's talking to all of the people in the church. And too often, generosity is looked as somebody else's responsibility, right? That's what we all do. All of us sort of opt out because we think like, oh, that person who makes 30 G's more than me, they should be generous. You know who they're looking at? The people who make 30 G's more than them. Just keeps on going. And everybody opts out. And Paul's like, all of you should opt in. Each of you. Each of you. Which is really cool. And again, biblical generosity is not just financial generosity, although it is, but it's whole life generosity. I even just want to testify one of the coolest things I saw happen over this past year, where a lot of people lost jobs, and they said, I got no money, I'm on unemployment, I'm barely making ends meet right now, but I have time, I got a lot of time. I can't apply for a job 16 hours a day. Anybody ever try to apply for a job 16 hours a day? Has that gone well for you? So I'm going to take 8 hours, I'll do it, and I got time. Anybody need anything? Like some of the coolest things that have happened over the last year is people all of a sudden leverage the gift of their time, the gift of their talents for the sake of the flourishing of other people. Three, planned is to put something aside and store it up. So it is biblical to be a good steward of your resources. God gave you everything, and so consequently, we have a plan to be able to steward, oversee, manage those resources entrusted to us well. Now, this is where I would say, I would really encourage you to have a budget. And I know some of you just flinched or maybe blacked out for a second, like, what did he say? Or you're like, did he just cuss? Look, here's all a budget is, all right? Here's all a budget is, beloved. A budget is telling your money where to go as opposed to coming to the end of the month and finding out where it went and feeling a lot of shame as a consequence. All right, we don't have to raise hands here, but if you know, you know, right? And too many of you are stuck in a cycle where you don't have a plan and you want to be generous. I'm not saying you don't want to be generous, but because you don't have a plan and you don't lead with generosity, what's happening is you're coming to the end of the month and you're just sort of like crossing your fingers like, I hope I don't overdraft, I hope I don't overdraft, I hope I don't overdraft. And that is a brutal way to live. It's cute for a little while and it's brutal. It's brutal after any period of time. And so here's what I just want to say. We have people all the time, like literally all the time, coming to us being like, my financial life is out of order. Could you help? And we would love to help, okay? We'd love to help. We have a woman on our staff, Shekinah, who's really good at this, and would love to help you or connect you to somebody who can help you. Here's her email right here, shekinah@summitdenver.org. You can send her an email. You can send her an email right now. Be like, help. That's all you can put. You just put that in the subject line, and she'll know what it means. But hey, a lot of times, particularly when our financial lives are out of order, we feel a lot of shame about that, and don't let shame win here, okay? Healthy people, look at me, healthy people get help. Healthy people are not the people who pretend like they have no problems. Healthy people get help. Healthy people get help. And consequently then, don't feel shame of being like, hey, I just need some help. We would love to help or connect you to somebody who can really help as well. Fourth, Paul has this posture, or he's trying to stir within us this posture of gratefulness. He says, as he may prosper. As he may prosper. Now again, one of the other reasons that we opt out of generosity is because we are dismissive of the reality of the prospering God has given us. And a lot of times what happens is we are so focused on what we don't have, we ignore the 99% of what we do have. And particularly when you, like, even as an American, if you're going through, the tension I'm feeling is I'm not trying to be dismissive of financial hardships because they're real and it's foolish to be dismissive there. At the same time, if you juxtapose what a typical American has from the global realities of what people have, I mean, just something like clean water, access to clean water, it is crazy how much we have. And it's crazy the degree to which every single day it is instinctual for us to wake up thinking about the one or two things we wish we had as opposed to the stunning gifts that God has given us. It's like, you know what I want to do? Here's what I want to do. I want to wake up every single morning and be like, oh my God, existence. Like, you can't eBay that junk. Like, I'm breathing. You go to school to be able to make that happen. That's a gift. It's like, Paul has this line in 2 Corinthians 8 that I think about all the time. And he says it is acceptable according to, he's talking about generosity here. He's saying it is acceptable to give according to what a person has, not according to what he does not have. And it totally flips this way we think about this, because all the time we're thinking about what we don't have, and then we're like, well, once we have that thing, we'll be generous, which never happens, does it? And he's like, look at what you do have. Give according to what you do have. Don't be so focused on what you don't have. Give according to what you wish you had as opposed to what you, or give according to what you do have as opposed to what you wish you had. And then, I can't even remember what number I'm on. Is this 5? Okay, non-coerced. So there will be no collecting when I come. And I love this about Paul. Like there's a tension in the church, and I think coercion is such a subjective kind of concept of like, is that coercive, is it not? Some of you might feel like just me talking about money at all is a coercive thing. But Paul talks about it, Jesus talked about it all the time. But there is this idea that he's not doing this weird thing of coercing a bunch of people of being like, if you don't give, then, you know, he's not doing the weird thing when you check out at a grocery store and in a line full of people, you're being asked, do you want to like feed dogs that are going to die if you don't feed them, right? That's a difficult situation to be put in where you felt a little bit coerced. Some of you might actually care about those dogs and some of you might be like, well, I don't want to look like a terrible human being in front of all these other people who are behind me. So sure, here's a dollar, okay? Paul's saying, like, I just want you to be generous. I don't want there to have to be huge asks. I don't want there to have to be emergencies. I just want you, in the regular rhythm of your life, as you receive stuff, set stuff aside so the church can advance in the way that it's supposed to advance. Even, I feel like I'm trying to think about, like, the way this is even manifest in the life of our church, because we probably err on the side if we don't really talk about finances enough. And even Shekinah was telling me, she's like, yeah, I get like a question almost weekly, like, where do I give money if I want to support this church? I'm like, okay, we might need to step up the communication there a little bit, which you can give online. Thank you for asking that question. You can give online at our website. There's a box back there as you're leaving these doors if you want to give to. But we don't want to be coercive. We're not trying to guilt and shame. We're just trying to say, hey, like, I see what God's done and I want to continue investing there. So that's the plan that Paul has in mind. Now let's talk about the power to get there. Because the reality is, as much as we might be enticed by that idea, again, remember, as much as we might admire generosity or aspire to generosity, and even a lot of times as much as we might have a plan for generosity, the reality is a lot of times we're just scared. And it's a scary thing to give away money. Now, I think from the context of what you're seeing Paul do in 1 Corinthians 16, and particularly when you read 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, what you're seeing Paul do as it pertains to generosity is to help us radically rewrite our understanding of the timeline of our lives. Okay? It's like he's almost taking us out for a second. He's like, I don't want you to, let's just hit a pause on generosity and let's help you understand the way that the gospel rewrites your story and consequently how in the present you can live very generously. Now, put together this very complex, artistically, some of you, we're in a very artistic neighborhood, so I'm gonna flex with my artistic abilities here. So here you go, right here. Put this together, it took some time. I messed this up the first time I tried it. If I'm completely, there's like rough drafts of this in like the trash cans in the office. So it's just like, okay. So here's where a lot of us are. Think of your life like a timeline, past, present, future. Past, present, future. In the past, where a lot of us live is in a place of forgetfulness. Forgetfulness of God's blessings, forgetfulness of God's provision, forgetfulness of God's... Now, it's interesting, to some degree, Steph said this in the office, and it's a great observation. She was like, yeah, we're forgetful of the good things, but we have like crazy memory as it pertains to the bad things. So it's almost like we have selective amnesia where we forget the good things, we remember with unbelievable precision the bad things, and then we're like, that's the story I'm living, okay? Fear is in the past. And the future then, or sorry, forgetfulness is the past. And the future then is fear. We don't have to have a show of hands here, but a lot of times what happens is even our rhythm of falling asleep is thinking about various scenarios that are in process that we don't know how are going to fall apart, and we mind map the various catastrophic ways that situation can go. What you are doing is in a very unhealthy way practicing the biblical art of prophecy, where what you are doing is prophesying gospel-less futures. You are prophesying, here are all the different ways that God isn't going to show up. So when you're living, look at this, when you are living between the points of forgetfulness of the good things and fear of all the terrible things that are going to happen, it gives justification in the present to live out of cynicism and self-preservation. Nobody's watching out for me. Nobody's taking care of me. Nobody loves me. Nobody's providing for me. Nobody's going to show up for me. And consequently, I can justify being only worried about me. And what hopefully biblically angers me in some ways about 2020 is the degree to which there is almost a culture-wide permission slip to live the rest of your life this way. And I'm telling you, if you don't wake up to this, you're going to continue on this trajectory. Beloved at home, if you don't wake up to this, you're going to continue on this trajectory. And there is no great life at the end of this journey. It's generosity that differentiates the okay life and the bad life and the self-pitying life or a good life or okay life from a truly great life. So what does the gospel do, Paul tells us? Is the gospel takes us from this to remembering, anticipating, and living in gospel generosity, right? So what we do is we pick up the biblical practice of remembering that's mandated regularly in the scriptures. Remember, 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 remember. We then become expectant and anticipatory of the different ways that God is going to show up in the future. And consequently, in the present, instead of only worrying about me, instead of using people to acquire stuff, I can use stuff to bless people for the glory of God. Most of us instinctually were taught in 2020, use people, hate people, get stuff. The gospel flips that upside down and says, God gives me stuff to bless people, to bless other image bearers, to advance the causes aligned with the heart of God, and to bring glory to God, like a mirror reflects what is in front of it. So image bearers are meant to reflect the generosity of our God. And so what I want to do is, I want to read some verses over us, just a few, but this is only helpful if we kind of participate in this together. So what I want you to do in this time is not just sort of conceptually be like, yeah, I should be like more hopeful for the future. I'd love to invite God is speaking to you, whatever's going on right now, by the power of his Spirit who indwells you and knows the heart and the mind of Christ, to intersect with whatever it is you're going through right here and right now. And so let's think about these rhythms. Let's think first about like remembering, okay? And if it's helpful to pray through this, or I'll speak this. I'm going to kind of pray through this. So you can do whatever you want, but that's what I'll be doing up here. I think about what Paul says in 2 Corinthians 8, where he tells us to remember. A lot of times we struggle to point to a concrete historical moment where God's been generous. And Paul says that you know, Christian, you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you by his poverty might become rich. Like, just take a minute and give thanks to God that he has the most power in the universe and he gifts his son. Contrast that towards the other expressions of power in the world. Politicians, dictators, CEOs of major corporations are using their power to use people, aren't they? And God doesn't treat us that way. Just ask God to cultivate in your heart a posture of worship that he would be so generous to us. As we remember, I want to read another passage from Deuteronomy 8, where we're told to beware lest you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gotten me this wealth. You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get well. God, I pray we would remember, even right now, bring to mind, cut through our cynicism, bring to mind the ways that you've taken care of us, provided for us. And we want that remembrance to transition into anticipation, a sense of looking to the future. We echo what Paul says at the end of 1 Corinthians 15, that because of the gospel of Jesus, death is swallowed up in victory. Oh, death, where is your victory? Oh, death, where is your sting? Father, right now, in your kindness, would your Spirit cut through the lie that we believe that we will acquire enough stuff to establish an empire, to live forever? Like, we are on a journey towards death, and we will lose everything. And so consequently, right now, let us be open-handed with what you've given to us and purposeful and intentional. And even right now, reassure us that we're not afraid of that final breath. Death, where is your sting? Death, where is your victory? Jesus is victorious. And God, I pray you would give us wisdom for the present. Think about what Paul says here. On the first day of every week, each of you is to put something aside and store it up as he may prosper so that there will be no collecting when I come. And I think about the freedom that's given there, the trust in you and your people. But God, as Paul says in Galatians 5, 6, for freedom, Christ has set us free. For freedom, Christ has set us free. And a lot of times we see freedom as a justification to opt out of the clear commands of Scripture. That's not what the Scriptures have in mind. We are liberated to do what you've called us to do, and in that is joy. We're liberated from being so afraid all the time. We're liberated from having to self-preserve all the time. We're liberated from the lie that nobody's watching out for us. Set us free, God. Set us free, and we ask these things in the powerful name of Jesus. Amen. All right, we're going to try to keep this in mind, press into this as we respond through singing, as we respond through the taking of communion. We have a slide now that shows you kind of where to go as it particularly serves you. But hey, as we're doing this, as we're doing this, participating, if you're a follower of Jesus, want to become a follower of Jesus, meditate on God's generosity. Maybe have it open in front of you. You can read 2 Corinthians 8, for example, where Paul talks about how the broken body and shed blood of Jesus is the ultimate expression of God's generosity that should make us generous. And come up and partake as you feel led. We'll also have people that would love to receive you in prayer. So in the back corner over there, that back corner right over there, there'll be women and men who would love to receive you, pray over you. And so we are going to sing. Y'all can go ahead and band can go ahead and y'all can come up. We're going to sing. We're going to pray, take communion. We're going to worship. We're going to try to press into this reality of how God rewrites our story so we can live differently now. Let's now respond as the Spirit leads.